topic or like on the sechta?
Any topic.
When is that slot?
Thursday nights.
Thursday nights. That's so nice. That's a really great thing. Meaning the most important thing, if you want to become good at teaching Torah, is to teach Torah. Meaning to see what works, see what people are falling asleep. In general, if you're speaking, you'll sometimes if like you listen to Shiram or like Vayit Torah or something, you can tell when a person is talking to a recorder, and you can tell when a person is talking to an audience. Because a person who's talking to an audience is reacting to the audience and adjusting based if they're with it, you know, they're adjusting based on what the audience is doing. A person who's talking to a recorder has no idea, and therefore, you know, it doesn't come out as good. It comes out much more contrived and less natural. So the best way to improve your skills as a teacher is to actually teach. I'm a big believer in that. I know that there are many that believe that certain types of graduate degrees are the best way to improve your skills. And there are skills that can be taught in graduate school. None of them are as important as the skills that can be taught with experience. So that's Aleph. But in terms of preparing, so it really depends on the topic. But some things that are like shovel a call that are always important to keep in mind is that first of all you should be 100% clear on what you're teaching. Not just that you came up with a chap. Sometimes you come up with a chap you want to share it, but you're not even 100% clear on what the ramifications of that chap are. So you should really be thought through, clear, organized. Sometimes you come up with a chap and you don't realize that there are 7 steps that people need to know in advance before they get to that, you know, that chiddush that you have to say. The chiddush is worthless if no one's going to understand it, if they're not going to understand the background to the chiddush or why it's a chiddush. So make sure you don't skip steps. Make sure you start. Rav Shechter is obviously, he's the master of this. You know, he'll start with, okay, so Hashem created the world in 6 days. And then, you know, like he'll sometimes, you know, just start with like very, very basics, and he'll take you through that the Torah says, and then the Chazal understood, and the Rishonim say, and walk you through the background. I think a lot of times when I was in Rav Shechter Shir, I probably picked up less of the actual Torah that he was trying to give, and much more of the background information in his sodos that he gave on the way to teaching that Torah. I mean, there were a lot of times where he would say, okay, there's a din of an avatumah, there's a din of aviyavosatumah, there's a din of cherev harayu kechalov, and all of that was just an introduction to, you know, there are 3 types of oel, there's being ma'il al, something, tumah's ma'il and yo, and there's oel am shacha. But all of that was a way to get to a chiddush that he was trying to say. And I don't remember the chiddush because he only said that once. But I remember the yesodos that he gave us, and I can't tell you how helpful that was. Just over the years in learning, like when you know, oh, I know this yesod, and it doesn't emerge necessarily from the Gemara that you're learning. But if you know that background information, you'll be able to understand a lot more. So absolute clarity on what needs to be said, and to organize what you're going to say, to organize all of the steps and make sure that you're not skipping steps. I think that's very important. I think it's also important that you be entertaining. You know, at the end of the day, if people are bored, they're not going to learn. Most people. There are some people that, like, it's Torah Hashem, and that alone is riveting to people. Most people are not like that. Even B'nai Torah. We had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with Shani Tarragon, Rav Tarragon's wife. And she is an absolute powerhouse. Right? She is like unbelievable. So we were talking about Talmud Torah, and one of the things she said, a lot of fascinating things, most of which I'm not going to share, but one of the things that she told us was that she was listening to some of the popular speakers that are out there. And the speakers that will go to every yeshiva, and everyone's there, they'll pack the room and everyone will come and listen. And she just couldn't believe, like she said, one of the speakers compared Rabbi Akiva to a quarterback. And I'm like, yeah, I taught him boys high school. Yeah, Rabbi Akiva's a quarterback. You know, like that. She was like so hurt by it. interesting. How could you compare Rabbi Akiva to a quarter? Like, how fluffed up does your Torah have to be? Like, how much do you have to peel away of content in order to get to the point where Rabbi Akiva becomes a quarterback? And, like, you know, but it sells. So meaning that most people will still go to that speech and say, oh, that was a great speech. Rabbi Akiva, the quarterback, he got the touchdown at the last minute. It was, you know, whatever. I don't know what the comparison was. I don't know the context. But they'll be very inspired by that. So I think there's a, you know, fine line. You know, I don't think, you know, I think the entertainment value should be this is just personally what I believe. I'm sure a lot of people disagree. The entertainment value and the jokes and the stories, and this is my Masora from Moreno Rabbeinu, Rav Schechter. He never told this to us, but it came out in every shiur he ever gave. That the entertainment value is a chitimtza to get people to pay attention to the Torah and to deliver the Torah in a way that hadvarim smechim kinitzinas misidah. But the Torah content should be obvious that the Torah is the ikur. I probably sometimes walk on the other side of that line where it's not as obvious. Rav Schechter does not walk on the other side of that line. He does make it very obvious that the Torah is the ikur, but he has the skill of being able to say it in such an entertaining way, in such an interesting way, where it'll, you know, always bring in a story, and, you know, if you see that you're losing the crowd, so bring it back with another story, with, oh, instead of just quoting, the Ketzos says, tell some funny story, you heard about the Ketzos, that whatever, you know, you'll notice that that's what Rav Schechter does all the time. That's why he's a great teacher, that's why for over 50 years people have been coming to the shiur. So it has to be entertaining. Rav David Willig used to always tell me, you say, Rabarie, we're in the entertainment business. You know, that's at the end of the day, we're in the entertainment industry. So that's an important thing. But it's all a hechitimsa to deliver a meaningful content. You shouldn't get so caught up in the entertainment part of it that you forget to deliver content. I think people will get bored of that eventually, or it will just be so light that people won't take it seriously after a while. Nor should they. You know, that people should feel like you gave them some serious content, some serious something to think about. Those are the things that come to mind most. You know, sometimes people feel like if they have an impressive Mar Mokobos sheet, so they have to read every Makar inside, Mitchilas Avat Sofa. You know, you really have to know the context. If you're teaching a group of high school kids in school, and you are their Rebbe who is tasked with teaching them the skills of reading Gemara, so yeah, there's going to be a lot more reading. If you're giving a shir in a community, or you're giving a chabura to some guys in yeshiva, so then it could be very boring to just be reading through. Also, sometimes you get the sense when people are reading through sources that they're not sure where the important parts are, and that they need to read it in order to remind themselves where the important parts are. I've been there. I was there today. I gave a shir in Shalavim today, this afternoon. They asked me to give the regular shir slot to the Shanabet guys, because both Shanabet Rebbe were in America. And I just didn't have time to... I just printed out an old shir. I didn't even print it out. I just had it on my computer. I pulled up an old shir, and I didn't have time to read it beforehand. So it was a shir I gave, I don't know, 5 years ago. I didn't have time to read it. I have no idea what I said. So I was like, you know, sort of like it was as much a chiddush to me as it was to anybody else. But that's not the way you're supposed to do it. I'm teaching by example what not to do. You know, that's not the way you're supposed to do it. You should be clear. And that way you'll be able to figure out which lines you want to read, which are the important parts, you know, which are, you know, come with the oomph. And also, if you're going to read, read with emotion, read with passion, read like you're, if you're gonna, whenever you teach Torah, you ever hear Rabbi Shalom Razer teach Torah? It's like Torah is the greatest thing in the whole world, and he just needs to share it with you because he wants you to share that amazing thing that he discovered. He just discovered this incredible, valuable gem, and he just needs to share it with you. People should get that impression that it's not like, oh, I want to say a shir. It's like, oh my gosh, there is this incredible Torah, and you need to hear it. And it's compelling. So it shouldn't be contrived energy. Like, to really develop your Avas HaTorah to the extent that when you share that Torah, it's exciting. It's exciting to hear that Torah. So I think that's a... And another thing, I'm just thinking out loud here, I didn't think this through beforehand. again, breaking all the rules that I'm telling you, you know, I didn't think this through beforehand. But it's not my fault, I didn't know that I was supposed to do this until I got here. So, my daughter said recently, it was a few months ago, we were having our Shabbos Seudah, and my 11-year-old daughter says, I think she was 10 at the time, announced that when she grows up, she's going to be a great speaker. So I said, why do you think that? And I was hoping she would say, because Abba, you're such a great speaker. She did not say that. She would, because she'll say anything to make me happy. But she said, because I watch what works when other people speak, and I see what works and what doesn't work. So now I was intrigued, because that's pretty brilliant for a 10-year-old. So I said, what works and what doesn't work? So she said, well, first of all, you always have to start with a joke. Because I see that if you start with a joke, everyone laughs, and then they're listening. But if not, if you start with, you know, the Parsha says, then no one's paying attention after 3 seconds. Okay, pretty good. Okay. You know, that yisod of just watching people who are successful. So what I would recommend you do, you know, you have great teachers here, meaning they're great talmidei chacham also. I mean, be'ikar, they're great talmidei chacham. And what you might, and I remember when I was in yeshiva, what I appreciated about my rebbeim, what I knew to appreciate about my rebbeim was that they were great talmidei chacham. I didn't even think about the fact that they were great teachers. All my years in Rav Shach Tashir, I knew that he was an enormous talmid chacham. It never even occurred to me to think of him as a teacher, just as a great talmid chacham whose Torah I wanted to hear. But he's a great teacher. So you have people here who are not only great talmid chachamim, which they are, and you probably think of them that way, they're also great teachers. So watch them teach. You know, watch, and by watching them teach, I mean, don't just watch them, watch the audience, watch the people. See how people react to different things that they do. I've been going around telling everyone how amazed I was at Rav Moshe Weinberger's ability to hold a crowd on Thursday night. And you just watch how he handled what was an impossible situation. 600 guys from Yeshiva, I don't know if it was really 600, that's the number YUNC to believe, but whatever the number was, from yeshivas like Yeshivat HaKotel and Shalavim and Ashreinu and Reshit, and I mean, you know, you're talking about a lot of very different kinds of kids, right? And he's trying to talk, and he's about to speak. Everyone's talking to each other. The room is noisy, and like, I don't know how I would handle that situation. I would probably just wait. But you'd wait forever when there are 600 people. They wouldn't even realize you're waiting. Like in front of, like when I give a speech in shul to the, whatever, the 100 people that are in shul, let's say, or 80 people that are in shul, I can wait. And they'll realize I'm waiting because I'm standing there and davening's not going on, and they'll be quiet. And there is value to that, to like the 10-second pause, you know, just enough to make it a little uncomfortable. And then starting. There is value to that. But you couldn't do that. So I would have said, hey, everybody, shut up, okay? I'm here to you came for me. So, you know, but that's not what he did. What did he do? He said, wow, the beautiful sound of chaverim talking to each other. Such a beautiful sound to hear. And everyone was quiet like that. Meaning, he knew how to express himself in a positive way, not make people feel badly about themselves, make people feel better about themselves. That people should feel positive, they should feel good about themselves, and still get his point across, exactly what he needed to get across. It's extraordinarily valuable. So I think another thing to keep in mind, and great teachers do this also, they in our generation, great teachers do this. Soloveitchik was a great teacher and did not do this because in a different generation it worked differently. In our generation, you need to make people feel good about themselves. People will open their minds when they feel comfortable, when they feel happy. If they don't feel happy, if they feel like, you know, threatened, then they'll clench up and they're not going to open their minds. That was not the classic Litvisha style. The classic Litvisha style was to, if someone came unprepared to Rav Soloveitchik's shir, if you were supposed to read a Balamar and you didn't read that Balamar, he'd let you have it. And that was all the Litvisha Rosh Yeshiva. Ah, shikar go, you're yelling like all these insults, and you'd walk away feeling like, but like that used to motivate people to prepare. Now it would motivate people to say, oh, it's ridiculous, I don't need this, you know, I get enough abuse in my life, why does he think he is, and you know, it would cause an entirely different reaction. So it's important to realize, and I don't know, that might change again, right? Meaning you have to know your generation. One of Rav Schachter's great fears is that he's falling out of touch, that he's too old. I mean, it's an unfounded fear, because like he's so geschmack, you know, like, and everyone knows that. But like he's nervous about that. He's always nervous that he's losing a step, which is like insane, because he's really not. That I know for sure, and that he's falling out of touch, and that's a healthy fear for a person to have. It's absurd for him to have it at this point, but it's a healthy fear for a person to have, in the sense that, you know, you should make sure that you're talking on the same. You know, sometimes like you'll let's say you're teaching in a high school in 5 years from now, 10 years from now, so you're gonna want to be cool, so you'll make like the pop culture references from 2014, and like. The year is 2027, and the Talmidim were in diapers in 2014, and that doesn't, you know, it doesn't do anything for them. It makes you look more out of touch, right? It's stick with what you know. the most important thing when you're now, I realize I'm branching off from preparing a chabura to just teaching people. Because that is also an important thing. I think Rabbi Yisrael Reisman said it in our Aguda convention that he asked Rav Pam, Zichrono Levracha, for the best, when he started teaching, for good eitzah and how to teach Torah. He said, "Don't teach Torah, teach Talmidim." Meaning, you're connecting to people, and you have to think about what makes people motivated and want to learn and. I remember there was a tekufa where I was not, personally, I'm just sharing a personal thing, with, I don't know if anyone cares, but where I was not planning on going into chinuch. I was planning on going to law school. And the reason I was planning on not going into chinuch was not because I wanted to make a lot of money. That's not why I was going to go to law school. It's not even because I was interested in the law, per se. I was going to go to law school because I thought I would fail at chinuch. The reason I thought I would fail at chinuch was that I looked around at many of my chaverim who were going into chinuch, and they were just so dynamic. They were so multi-talented. They were good ball players, and they played guitar, and they knew how to, you know, they did NCSY their whole lives, and they knew how to, and they just knew how to do things. And I was like, I liked learning. And I didn't really have any of that. Average to below average at ball. I mean, not like embarrassing on the court, but like average to below average. Like I could, like I, you know, I got in the game, but like, you know, and music, forget about it. I'm totally tone deaf, and I was looking at Rabbi Kamenetsky as like Rabbi Yisrael Kamenetsky as like, I still do, as the paradigm of a perfect mechanic, but I didn't chop what made him a great mechanic. I thought it's because he played tackle football with us in Camp Nisora, and you couldn't bring him down. Which, by the way, you couldn't. Bull. But it was sheer willpower. I don't even think he was that strong. It was just sheer willpower. That's not what it was. It's that he was genuine. It was that he was sincere. It's that he cared. But I didn't chap that that's what... I didn't even realize what I was reacting to. And then you look around and you see mechanchim that are successful. And some of them, all of their jokes are corny. And they're, you know, ridiculous. And they have... You know, they're not cool in any way, but the Talmidim react to them. And the Talmidim react to them because they're sincere, they have great midos, they're not balei gaiva, and they just care about the Talmidim. And that's, that when you're teaching Talmidim, that's what really matters. Yeah, it was made, what I think would have been a huge mistake in my life, because I was just looking at the wrong things. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, there are people that will talk about how to include pop culture in, and that could be valuable, and it is valuable for certain people, and I'm not knocking it, but that's not the key to your success. That's not the key to your success, is how to incorporate movies into your shiurim. That's not the key to your success. The key to your success is to care about the Jewish people, care about the specific talmidim in front of you, and to try to give over Torah in a sincere and honest way, and to not be afraid to say I don't know when you don't know. Very often a Talmud or anybody will ask a question and they're not even looking for an answer, they're looking for validation. So sometimes they ask a really good question, and you'll see people do this, they'll say, well, I think, and they're clearly making something up. Right, they're totally making up anything. They don't know the answer to the question, and they'll try to like rush away from the question as if to make the person feel like, or they'll say something else to make the person feel like it wasn't a good question when it was. They'll try to pull like a switch or something. It's so much more powerful when you say, "That's a great question. I don't know. I'm gonna have to look it up." It's even more powerful if you actually look it up. Which a lot of times I don't, because I just get caught up with other things and I forget about it. But that's, you don't have to be the greatest Talmud Chacham to be a good teacher. You have to know what you're talking about in that lesson, but you don't have to be the greatest Talmud Chacham to be a good teacher.
So if we're going to be teaching like kids here in high school, if we're giving chaburas over the summer as a counselor, then what would be the biggest thing that we have to be aware of that's different between yeshiva guys and post-yeshiva guys and kids who are still in high school or just beginning high school?
Yeah, I mean, yeshiva guys are coming in with the assumption that this is valuable because it's Torah. That's the biggest difference. Meaning they've already been sold on the value of Torah. Now you have to just show them that the Torah that you have to offer is high-quality Torah. Meaning, if you don't do well at teaching yeshiva guys, they'll say, you're not a good teacher. They're not going to say that the Torah stinks. With younger guys, depending on the context, you know, sometimes, I don't know which program you're talking about or where you're going to be, but very often with young guys, even on the very high level, the Heilige NCSY Kollel, a lot of the guys are not sold on the value of Torah. I don't know what the numbers are. I'm not going to say majority of a lot of the guys are not yet sold on the value of Torah. And again, I think that, and this you certainly find with a Madrich kind of personality on these, you know, on these NCSY type programs, on even like Moshava type programs, or like a Madrich type of personality who's a Ben Torah that's supposed to be a role model. The turn on to Torah will be through the person more than through the Torah, usually. If the person teaching the Torah seems like he's honest and sincere and excited about the Torah, and they see that, oh, that's what a Ben Torah looks like. That's a great guy. That's someone who, you know, there's only one dessert left and he's looking which camper needs it the most instead of taking it for himself because he's the counselor, so he gets to take it. Like, that will do more than whatever it is, you know, however dazzling the Torah is going to be. Again, the Torah should still be good, and it should be clear, it should be understandable. I'm a big believer in that also. In certain places, the less understandable the Torah is, the better the shiur is. With younger kids, that does not work. I argue with Beis Medrash kids, it doesn't work either, but it depends on the culture. Right, in certain places that it actually does. The more confused people walk away from the shiur, the happier they are. Like, wow, that was awesome. I remember there was one particular Rebbe in one of the yeshivas that I once taught at that guys would come away from the shiur. That was awesome. And I knew that they didn't know anything. And I would say, really? What did he say? Oh, it was amazing. Okay. So it might, with younger kids, that would never work. They would just get frustrated and they'd not be interested. They want to feel like they understood something, like they have something. They want to feel like they get it. But even if they don't get it, if they love you, they'll pretend they got it.
Is now, meaning guys, kind of at a time in our lives to start thinking about whether chinuch is something that you maybe think about down in the future. What are ways to channel our thoughts, make that decision? preparatory things we could do to try to
preempt. I think it's absolutely a time to start thinking about those things. I think for sure it's a time to start thinking about those things because you're removed a little bit now. Meaning sometimes it's hard to think about things when you're in it. So you need to be like removed a little bit to get like something. Being in Eretz Yisrael for me is like the healthiest thing because, you know, I really get to like look at my life from an outsider's perspective. I'm not there now. I'm not like in my element, so to speak, in my jobs, in my missions, in my, you know, the things that I do. And I could really just look from an outside, you know, like every time I come back from Eretz Yisrael, what's the line? Now, I'm just going to give a dated pop culture reference. What's the line in the Billy Joel song? You know, man, what are you doing here? But everyone knows that one, right? Man, what are you doing here? Like every time I go back to America, I'm like, man, what are you doing here? Like, you know, and it's a healthy question to ask. You have to ask yourself, like, what are you doing? Why? Why would you be here? So I think when you're removed from something, it's a good time to think about it. Not that a decision you make now is going to be set in stone, you know. But it's good to take a look around and see different models of mechanchim and balabatim and successful balabatim. And by successful, I do not mean rich, which is often the term the word successful means. So I just want to be clear about that. I do not mean rich. I mean people who are successful b'nei Torah, and there are doctors and the lawyers, and those aren't the only two jobs that exist. There are a million other jobs, and look at like what fits you best. Also, it's helpful to know, just so you should know, there is a tremendous need in America right now for mechanchim. When I left DRS, I wasn't fired. When I left DRS 3.5 years ago, so Rabbi Storch told me that the day after, you know, the news got out that I was leaving, there were 70 resumes on his desk. I don't know what happened in 3.5 years since, but he said it's difficult to find qualified candidates now. That's DRS, which, you know, is an all-boys, New York, working for the king, you know, for Rabbi Kamenetsky, who's the best mechanic on earth. I'm not saying that, like, in any exaggeration, I actually believe that 100%, and I think anyone who's in chinuch knows it. Working for the, you know, like you would think, like everyone's clamoring to, and there are a lot of people clamoring. But can you imagine if you're trying to run a high school in, for example, Boston? Not even, I'm not talking about like Kentucky, but like Boston, Los Angeles. We're getting calls from people all across the country. Send us. Smicha guys, send us mechanchim. We'll pay them. We'll do, you know. So I think like we raised a whole generation of kids to be told, you know, you can't go into chinuch because you'll never be able to support a family. And therefore, every guy who wanted smicha wants to go into rabbanus, because they were told by somebody along the way that if you go into rabbanus, you can make money, but in chinuch you can never make money. That is partially true. If you are the rabbi of one of the six big shuls in the five towns, or the six big shuls in Teaneck, you can make money. Or these, whatever, seven big shuls in Los Angeles, you know, you can make money. You can make a good living. There aren't that many jobs like that. You know, not every Y-Smicha guy is getting that position. And chinuch, I think, if you're good, if you're valuable, if the Talmidim react to you, if you're... you'll be worth it to keep. You'll be worth it to, and there will be, you'll be in demand. It may not happen right away, and shouldn't happen through self-promotion. I think that it's a very bad idea for people. You know, we live in a culture where people are so interested in marketing themselves, because that's what the world around us does. Everyone's marketing themselves. So, mechanchim, sorry, I was in one of the yeshivas, one of the rebbeim came over to me and said, like, how do you, like, you know, get your name out there? Like, if I want to be, like, you know, on the day of Sadassim Rashas, like, next time, like, you know, what do you do to get your... He didn't say it that way, but, you know, like... So, and he told me what other people advised him, and there are people that gave him advice on what to do. Put all your stuff in one of your Torah, make sure that you, you know, cold call shuls when you're in a neighborhood that you'd like to speak, just get your... Like, that's, like, so... I don't think Rav Schechter ever asked to speak anywhere. he became Rav Schachter. And people said, wow, he's Rav Schachter. I wonder if we can get him. So if you're really good at and you know, you're just doing God's work and you're working for the Ribbono Shel Olam like you're supposed to, the Ribbono Shel Olam will take care of you. You'll be able to make a living. You'll be able to figure it out. And you'll be able to work for Hashem in a very clear and direct way your entire life. So it's something. It's a great, great profession to be in. It's as far as you know, the kinds of stress and job security and job satisfaction. It's a great, great profession. It's not for everyone. And part of what we do in YU Smicha, I learned this year, is we try to encourage guys that we think should be in Smicha to be in Chinuch, to go into Chinuch, and guys who should not be. To, you know, maybe become a plumber, you know, maybe find something else that maybe they can succeed at. And that's an important thing. So you should have rebbeim that are able to. That must be your rebbeim here are very like savvy. You know, some rebbeim are very big to lichem, but they're not so savvy. So like I don't think I've ever had a conversation with Rabbi Tagger where he didn't tell me something that I never would have thought of. Yeah. His brain is just working a million miles a minute, and it's just like he's always got like an angle that, like, well, that. And I just nod, and he's like, "Yeah, you see, you thought of it too, uh huh." So it's helpful to have people who are savvy who see things. You know, not that any one person has all the answers, but you know, it's helpful to have people to guide you. But it's a great, great profession. If it's for you, it's a great, great professional work to do in terms of quality of life. Not that you're going to be able to buy a mansion and drive a Porsche, but it's quality of life. It's a great, great profession. As I told you before, I was able to, I don't know if all you guys were here before, but I was able to be with my kids in their elementary school years, you know, from 6 to 8 every night. There's no other profession I think I could have done that. I mean, I would have to work like a dog in New York in order to afford a house in the Five Towns and pay tuitions and whatever. Yeah, it's a great life. All right, one more, and then I think I'm gonna have to go. Yeah.
Are there any flags like where Rebbe would say that person is should go into chinuch, or would you say he shouldn't go into chinuch? Like, what's a criteria?
Yeah. So if a person has major flaws in their midos, they should not go into chinuch. They should not be role models. I mean, major flaws. Everyone has flaws. Right, there are only four people that never sinned, right? So we're not all kilav. I don't know why I chose that one, because that's one no one knows, right? So everyone has flaws. But if a person has like really obvious character flaws, so that's a huge red flag. That a person should not go to chinuch. If a person has an overwhelming love for Klal Yisrael, that's a huge indication that he probably should be going into overwhelming love for Jewish people. A person who naturally or has developed the ability or the desire to be mevater on himself and his time in order to help other people. Those are the kinds of people that Klal Yisrael needs, I think. Also, obviously, maybe not so obvious, if you're going to be teaching higher level things, you should be someone who knows how to learn. You know, a lot of times people work very hard in the art of teaching, but not in actually learning. If a person is growth oriented, it is a very helpful thing. You know, there are people that make for amazing balabatim. Balabatim, I mean, people in other professions who contribute incredibly to the Jewish community, that probably would not do as well in chinuch. And if you're a personality type that is good at compartmentalizing, in the sense that not allowing stresses of work life to get in the way of your learning, you know, so that's an indication that you might be able to make it outside of the world of chinuch. You know, if you're a person who can see a greater mission in things that are not as obviously Kodesh, then you might do very well as a non-mechanech. Not that it's an indication you should get away from chinuch, but that you might do very well. I mean, a lot of times people just feel like there's no meaning in their lives. You know, okay, so I work for a finance firm, and you know, and I make rich people richer, and I don't see my kids because of that, because I'm making rich people richer all day, and they feel very empty because of that. If that's how you're going to see things, then probably you shouldn't go into that profession. But if you're someone who knows how to see bigger picture, that no, by doing this, I'm able to ensure that my children get the proper education where they will be the next link in that chain, and the greatest accomplishment, then you will be as accomplished as Rav Hershel Schechter. If your children are the next link in that chain and you didn't break that chain, you will have accomplished his greatest accomplishment. And you can see that. And you can see the opportunity. You know, I was talking to someone in and I'm going to have to end with this. I was talking to someone in, it doesn't matter where, I was talking to someone recently, and the person was struggling with whether they should go into chinuch or go into law. And the person was saying that they always imagined that they're not going to go into chinuch. Instead, they're going to become really, really rich, and they're going to support so much Torah. And then they didn't do as well as they expected on their LSAT. So they're thinking, uh-oh, you know, now what? Right? I didn't do as well as I expected on the LSAT. So now I can't become... I actually had the same conversation with two people. It was both about the LSAT. Two people recently that said, I wasn't planning on going to chinuch because I thought I should become really rich and support Torah. And I was very disturbed by the assumption that there are two paths to success. There is being a rabbi and being rich. That is horrible if that's our mindset, that those are the two paths to success. You can be as successful as Rav Hershel Schechter's greatest success by barely making it as a, you know, whatever profession you're in, barely managing to pay tuition with whatever breaks, because you're raising a daughter of Shomrei Torah mitzvahs. It's the greatest success in the world. But you think because you're not paying money for, you know, to support institutions, because you don't have it, or because you're not a rabbi that's, you know, teaching Torah to thousands or whatever you envision, that you're not successful, that's horrible. That means we're setting up, you know, we sometimes make fun of the Haredi world that, like, oh, if you can't make it in learning, then you're a nobody, and that's horrible. We're doing the same thing. We're saying if you can't make it as an inspiring rabbi or as a rich person, then you didn't make it. That's horrible. How about a person who, like, works really hard and on an off day, you know, comes to learn in the Smedrash for a couple of hours? How about a person who keeps a night seder? Which, by the way, in the modern Orthodox community, we're terrible at. You know, why is it that in the five towns, you can't find a decent night seder outside of the yeshivas? And in Tinek? But in Pesach, you can? Because in modern Orthodox community, we're not as good at that. And we have to get better at that. By defining that as success, that's a great success. So, I don't know if I answered your question. I don't remember what the question was. But thank you very much, everyone. It's been really a treat to spend the day with you. Now I have to go. I mean, I'm excited to go see my wife right now, so I'm not going to stick around.